Hey rugby fans, hope you're enjoying our podcasts. We've got something else that might be right up your street. It's our latest series, Inner Drive, with some of Ireland's leading athletes. It's out now and you can listen to it for free. In episode 3, I catch up with the Westmeath footballer, Luke Loughlin. We talk about his struggles with addiction and his ongoing experience of recovery. Check it out.
Off the ball, rugby.
Have you been in Crowbar before?
2009. Leicester are lucky to be blessed to be given us. We're going to play there next year, hopefully, with the
Leicester. But GA is shy.
GA is shy.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Yeah, it's hard to explain yourself. I suppose when we don't really know ourselves, it's hard to explain. I'm on a journey to find out about myself.
People would say, oh, leave him, he'll be grand, he'll come out of it, you know, or let him feather his own cap and everything. You just can't.
There was definitely occasions where, like, we were training on a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning, maybe even a game, 30 minutes before, and it was like, where's Luke?
And I says, you have to allow us help you. You have to allow us to put things in place to get you back on track and give you every opportunity.
Every time you think back to times that I was at rock bottom, I wanted to change, I just wasn't able, like, you know.
That door has to stay open, or we'd be maybe talking about a very different story today.
I've been at rock bottom 20 times.
Been through a lot. He's come out the far side of it, far better, far stronger. He's a person with great resilience.
Learned a lot in the last maybe 3 years about who I am and what makes me tick. I'm Luke Loughlin, I'm 28. I'm currently in recovery from cocaine and alcohol addiction. I'm nearly 3 years sober. I play football for Westmeath. I really try to learn from my mistakes. I feel like I've been given a second chance.
So this is the road I would have grown up on. My granny and granddad still live up here. So this is home for me.
Anyone that knows anything about hurling would say that Daddy was one of the top Westmeath hurlers back in the 60s. Some people are born with silver spoons. We had a hurl.
That's my grandparents' house there. That's where I would have lived with my mom. I think we were at, I think I was like two. There was 10 kids in the house, so it's crazy enough.
Football or hurling?
County football. And at the minute, club football, but before it was club hurling for a long time. Yeah, so they're very close. It's very hard to pick. I love them both. I love Westmeath football and I love the Downs, but Clonkill is where my family is from, and like at times I probably would have given up hurling for, and some people would think I'm pretty similar at both. It could be better maybe at hurling if I was at it a bit more, but my grandfather kind of is always like, oh, you know, he knows football is number one, but that's kind of the reason, you know, your family, that kind of pride thing, that's the real reason I love it. I love Clonkill, I love it.
He's a hurling man.
Hurling, true and true, you know, like, played at Westmeath years ago, and, like, he's 80, I think, now, and still, like, some of the stories he tell you about, like, when he got his first hurl and stuff like this, and you're there, like, and the hairs in the back of your neck are standing.
What type of a footballer are you?
Well, I actually played against Fermanagh last year and I kicked a few wides, and the man I was marking was like, you are the worst corner forward ever. You should be playing wing back, seriously. I think creative, hard working. I'm not going to say clinical. I don't think I'm clinical.
Great turn of pace, cultured left foot, lovely, lovely left foot, very explosive. Had huge ability, do you know what I mean? Very dangerous, very potent in front of goal, one-on-one and all of that. So very, very competitive. You know, loved winning the individual duel, the individual battle on the pitch. Loved winning the races, loved kicking good scores, all of that, do you know? So hugely competitive, very, very talented.
And creative, I think creative is a good
word. What does creative mean, that context?
Creative means just kind of going against the norm, I think, trying to try something different, willing to make the mistakes, like, you know, especially when you get a bit older, you don't mind making mistakes too much. Nobody's going to say too much to you.
I'd support that. I'd have no problem a player expressing themselves and trying to be creative and not so robotic and so on. Probably gets a little bit frustrating when you're trying to be creative with every ball you get, But it's just trying to get the mix right of that creativity, trying to, you know, play to a certain system and a certain pattern.
Creative part comes in to play there when, like, I want to get that score, yeah, or I want to try something different. But then you have to, you see now, intercounty, everyone has systems, everyone has, so you can't venture too far away, but I suppose it's, you're in the position, you need to be able to take chances. And like, that's a lot of what I would practice now at the minute, is that sort of, that piece.
It's very, very important that you don't clip their wings too much, because they're there because of their natural ability and they love playing football. And Luke loves playing football and hurling. There are some times in training that he would see stuff and I would go to him and say, I'd love to be in your head because I cannot see what you see. But that's the magic of these players, you know, and that's what makes these players stand out.
Best day in a Westmead shirt?
I think the Celtic Cup final just signified so much more than winning the medal for me. I was a year sober, I think, that day. Just the emotion of it all. I had never really experienced fans like that. Like, you know, you see people when they win, like, the pitch is crazy and the celebrations after. I'd never seen that in a Westmead jersey and nothing near it. I can't describe Mullingar, that it was bedlam, you know. So that sort of stuff sticks with me, with you, you know.
Yeah. Let's just talk a little bit about and get some of your memories of your thoughts on this in relation to the Allianz Leagues. 2022 then, of course, you start like a steam train, but you lose to Mickey Hart's Louth and to Longford, like you mentioned earlier, and it ends the promotion hopes. Did you know internally, though, even though those margins were really tight, that you were starting to build? Are you internally looking at all that going, we are right there and we know we're about to kick on, or was what came laterally?
Like that Longford game, it's the first time I'd ever seen Jack Rooney lose his temper. Like, never, like, not really like that, you know, like, actually at half time we came in, we were playing shocking, and Jack kind of more animated than normal. I think he hit the table a punch and everything. Now, I can't remember much, but I remember getting psyched up. Like, right. I was like, come on now, I'm going to go.
This is serious.
Just about to walk out, whipped off. You know, I was taking off. But yeah, it's so hard when everyone wants to do the right thing and you're just not getting the results, because it kind of makes you think, like, why are we doing this? But I suppose you just have to, you have to have the tough talks. Who's not working harder or what can you do more? But like, we definitely think we're better than the position we're in, but sometimes results just don't go your way. Like, you've a lot of games and like, it's hard to be honest all the time, but you just have to be, you know, and you need panel. I think a panel now is a big part. This year we've brought in a lot of lads, newer lads, and kind of you can see the development in the S&C that they're kind of ready now, and that's a big part of it. You know, maybe last year we might have had the panel to, you know, if a lad is not playing great, be able to drop him for a game. Like, look, you need to kind of buck up. Even especially around Jack's time, he used to like say to me, he was like, if you were bringing on a sub, what do you want him to have? I'd say,
don't be asking me this.
And I'd nearly say energy, pace, and, you know, maybe, you know, like something like work rate. Right. He'd say, oh, what are three of your best qualities?
Oh, no.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
And in 2024, it was finally Westmead's time. On the 30th of March, they were crowned Division 3 Allianz League champions. They promoted themselves to the second tier for 2025, a success that was years in the making for the team and for Luke personally.
I'm very good at putting on a brave face and putting on a show when inside I'd be quite a shy person.
I suppose shy, but he came across as being a very confident person. But that's because he was throwing out that persona that he was. Like, he came across as being very, you know, confident. He was a Jack the Lad, Yaki, Messin, all that kind of thing. But to me, he just was full of exuberance. Like, he was on the go morning, noon and night. From the minute he woke up to the minute he went to bed, he was go, 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 regardless of what it was at. So it was oodles and oodles of energy. He gave him an inch. He took 20 miles.
One of our first sessions, really, he arrived late and left early. And I just got a sense that he was a bit off and a bit frustrated.
We met playing with football. It was my first year at Westmead football with Jack Cooney, and Luke was a liability.
That's fair.
Probably where it comes from, for me, is, so my interpretation of addiction is the need to self-medicate and use alcohol and addiction as a crutch. So I grew up, I didn't have a relationship with my dad. It's okay now as an adult to say that. It doesn't bother me, like, people go through it all the time. But for me, so that could be perceived as trauma, like, you know. I was always looking for a kind of a validation in my life, and, you know, I had a fear of rejection, abandonment issues, and these all kind of escalated into my adult life until I found alcohol, I suppose. Probably used other things when I was younger, escape from reality, like a PlayStation, maybe, you know, could be up all night playing.
It's very hard to hear those things that, you know, he was looking for validation or fear of rejection. And I suppose maybe through different scenarios growing up, there was probably elements that he felt not rejected, that'd be a strong word, but like for a long time it would have been just me and Luke. And then there was the introduction, you know, of a partner, then, you know, his siblings came along, and that connection was broke. And I think a lot of it might have been that the fear of sharing somebody as well as a child. You have to, you know, now he no doubt loves his brothers and his stepfather and everything, but it's just that connection that we had would be massive. And when that's taken from you and you have to share it and everything, I think there's a fear that you're not going to have the time, the love to give.
Yeah, and I found drink when I was 14. No, I wasn't an alcoholic at 14, but I was able to talk to girls. I was good crack, I thought it was fun, but I had been chasing that feeling ever since, and I never got it again, ever.
And it's very hard as a parent, because you're looking back all the time and you're feeling guilty and you're feeling bad that maybe you should have done this and maybe you should have done that and maybe I should have seen the signs before he got bad and life turned out the way it was for him.
That's a lot for a kid to be trying to process.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about the abandonment issue with,
yeah,
your dad and up and around. That's, you know, you're into the PlayStation. There's probably a lot of kids out there that are in, you know, you're escaping your own thoughts,
yeah,
albeit, you know, it's a significant thing, obviously, that's happening in your life. What was your awareness when you were going through that, Luke, in terms of, this is why I'm doing this thing? Had you awareness of that on some level, or was that only laterally that you...
It was, well, I didn't have awareness, but I never thought I was good enough for anything, you know? And that's why when I played sport, that's where I was getting the maybe applause that I never got. But self-esteem would have been quite low. I would have got it very hard to connect with people. So something that I think I had from a young age was, like, I could be a different person around different people. And even as my addiction got, that's one thing, you know, I would have been like two different people. So I'd be someone around my mom, then around my friends, I'd be a complete different person.
Before, pre-COVID, it would have been like pubs after a game mostly. And then during COVID, it was kind of like a bottle, of spirits and kind of carry outs a lot, and going to like shebeens and like house parties, and didn't really matter, to be honest.
He was hard on himself, you know. He had issues. Obviously chased the fun and the crack, do you know what I mean? And he wanted to be center of it. And that's fine, got no issue there. But it was probably when he wasn't in the middle of that, how was he feeling and how was he coping? You know, a lot of it was just, how was he developing as a young person? Like, he was a young person at the time.
Maybe avoiding the issues of his biological father. I never dealt with that with him. I think it was the fact that it got to a stage where I looked at him as only my child. I didn't need to deal with it in my own head, but looking back, it should have been dealt with, it should have been spoken about, and we should have gotten maybe the help he needed to filter all that down and break that down so he could understand the whys.
Like, trauma is a very harsh word, like, you know, but like, I obviously had stuff that that I didn't deal with, and like, they're obviously wounds, and like, every time something else happens, like, this wound gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and I was always trying to fill a hole that I didn't really know was there. I didn't know how to explain it. I didn't know why I was different. Like, before, like, the good weather was a trigger of mine. Like, just even just one thing, I remember it was like just real warm, and I was like, oh, I'd love a few drinks. And like, do you know, the small, there's these little Copperberg cans, they're like this size. I was drinking them all day, and like, to me, that wasn't even really drinking, because I was just like, gosh, I was just quenching my thirst, and the weather was good, and like, I could have drank 20 or 30 of these things, you know.
Do you know, blatantly obvious when I look back on it now, like, it's like, do you know, red flags for
cry
someone
for
that's
cry,
exactly, cry for help. Whereas back then I was younger, I was more inexperienced, and it would have been a frustrating period for me as a coach, I suppose, trying to having to navigate somebody who at the time I kind of just thought didn't care.
Like, I just thought I was kind of a mad enough lad, like, you know, the older I got, like, the drink kind of obviously was a factor for me, and drugs as I got older again, and gambling as well when I was younger, just anything that could probably take me on my own head and my own thoughts. But I did a lot of stuff in my life. Like, I've been in college a few times, like, I thought that'd help it. I was in the army and moved to America. Anything I tried, my problems followed me everywhere, and eventually just caught me. Like, I've been at rock bottom 20 times, you know, say suicidal, or so what I could do is I'd put my head into work, or I'd get into football for a while as I got older, and that self-esteem never let me have it. So I could be going well, and I just ruin it all again. Just one bender there over a week, go missing, people looking for you.
Like, I've travelled the length and breadth of Westmeath and lots of counties looking for him, trying to find him. I even went to the guards on numerous occasions to see could they find him for me, or they pinned phones for me. You know, you'll do anything to help them, and you'll take the lies, you'll take the, you know, the promises, because you love them. You're a parent, that's it. I'm his mother.
And you suffer with, actually, I don't think I said this, I am an alcoholic. I actually don't mind saying that. It was tough at times to say it. What you do is you try to manipulate every situation to suit yourself. And that's what happens when you're an addict, is all you think about is yourself. But I've said before, like, I was raised a good person. I was, you know, my upbringing was not straightforward, but with good morals. I knew the difference between right and wrong, but I just couldn't help myself. I wanted to be good, so I could get drunk and I'd feel great. But then when whatever I'd have done, gone missing, or, you know, borrowed money, or just let people down, I would be eating myself up after, because I knew that was wrong. But the next thing for it is, like, how can I feel better? So it's just self-medicating again. That's all I was doing for the longest time.
Couple other triggers, maybe a loss, a win. Kind of rewarding myself. So, like, I would train hard for a little while before, and I'd either have two factors, like, the self-destructing thing came back into it, but I felt like I deserved it. Or if I had played well and we lost, I still felt like I deserved it.
The last stint, I was 25 maybe, and I don't know what happened to me. It just, normally I'd be able to shake what was going on, but this time, the last time, that around that time, that May 2021, I just couldn't shake it, you know, and I think I went to the bender for on and off 2 months, and like, not eating, just drinking, like, all the time, cocaine. I'm sure it was over COVID, and like, I wasn't really working. I was in the army at the time. I wasn't working like once a month. So all I was doing was partying. I moved into an apartment in Mullingar. I gave up drink for 3 months. I got back on the Westmeath team, got to play in the league final. And a week before we played championship, Tottenham were playing the Champions League final against Liverpool, and I just couldn't help myself. I was a week out from getting, you know, I was after doing everything right for 3 months. It was like I had to let myself down. I just had to do it. And then what followed then was just 3 months where I literally was drinking basically every day. And I started to get then psychosis, kind of like paranoia. People were watching me or people were following me. So like, that's obviously not good for the head. Like my mom would be trying to meet me, but I wouldn't meet her at the apartment. I'd have to walk down the canal to meet her. And like, can you imagine like what she's thinking? Like what's going on or what sort of drugs is that guy taking? But I think 10 days in bed where I couldn't get out of bed. I just couldn't be, I hated myself. And I know that sounds crazy, but like, I just didn't want to exist. I didn't want to be alive. And the only thing for me was to get drunk because it made things slightly better. But that's just a vicious circle. The anxiety that will come after that is crippling. Like,
not long before he was really down and had come to, I'd say, the ends of his tether with himself, that I was like, I'm done. I remember ringing him or leaving a voice note or something. I said, look, I can do this no more. I'm actually wore out. But you're saying it, but at the same time, you're in the car driving around looking for him or whatever.
My mother obviously plays a big part. She never gave up really in me. She's not like I put her through torture. She stuck around all the time. That's, I suppose, the unconditional love she has. It's just been amazing for me. And I realise it more and more as I get on.
I was in work and I got a string of missed calls. And I then finally, when I got to ring him and rang it a few times, he answered. And he was actually on the canal and had been in the canal.
It's just been like, this is it. I need to end this. And it's kind of, I can't swim. So I was at the canal in Mullingar.
And like, that was one of the biggest shocks I got. You know, people say it in a way, you know, I'm finished with things and I can't do this anymore. But to actually be there to see that he was actually contemplating it, had probably tried it and maybe then backed out of it, but it was horrendous. I left work, I ran down, like I was the wrong side. I was like, how do I get to him? And you're trying to, it's awful, awful. And awful for us, but awful for him to be at that low ebb.
And one of the guards, he's actually was Clonkill manager for Kevin O'Brien. He kind of came and got me with my mum, and she brought me home.
That sort of a lifestyle, you don't know, often have a lot of people in that circle who are going to say, are you all right? Geez, you're at a low ebb, I can help out. Who were you reaching for, or were the people, or were you just trying to nearly deal with it on your own?
Yeah, because when you're out drinking, people just see you enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
Do you know, and you're like, it's just this young lad, like, you know, sure, that's all he's at.
Mm.
And like, as well, when I would start drinking, like no matter what was going on, I'd be in great form straight away. Like there wouldn't be a bother of me. It's just when it ended, I got it very hard to go home. Like I couldn't just go out for a night out. It was always 3-4 days. And like, there's a lot of people in Ireland that like can resonate with that.
Can I ask you what shape that would take when they would try to help you? What was that?
Some people would try and get me to keep coming to sport. So like there's times I drift away.
And someone that's been a great mentor to me down the years, it gave me, he said one thing like, and I live by forever. He said, the easy thing for me to do is get rid of Luke. That doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. And that was one of the switches then. Is like, I didn't feel bash myself too much for, you know, not being caring from the start, because I didn't understand.
Yeah, that's
but
fair.
That was the switch that was like, no, we have responsibility for this guy.
The players, I kept in communicating with the players all the time, particularly the senior players, of where Luke was at. And they showed a great sense of caring and a great sense of responsibility for Luke. And we felt we need to keep Luke close to us so we can keep an eye on him. And he's better in with us, where we can try and help him and care for him, you know, in a good way, and try and help him through the choppy waters that he was in, rather than being outside the circle.
And it was getting to the stage then, it's like, we were talking, you know, with some players and other coaches, that what do we have to do? We have to take some steps. Yeah. That, like that, it could have been a 2-week period where no one had seen you. That was the kind of like, we can't do this anymore.
That time then I met him in Mullingar, actually, and went out and picked him up in the house and brought him in, and I I was probably as low as I'd seen him now. He was in a really, really bad place. And we went about getting him, trying to support him and get him some help. And he allowed us to do that. So he trusted us to do that. And we've a great doctor. He's working in Westmead for the last 30 odd years, Dr. Gerry O'Flynn from Kilbeggan. So I rang Gerry O'Flynn straight away. And I'd say Gerry had things in place within 24 hours.
I'd been MIA at the time from the army for 2 months. My brother Josh, who was probably 16 at the time, he was sitting in the bed, and the army and the guards were obviously looking for me. Like, they'd rang my mother to warn her, like, look, this is just procedure. We need to bring this lad back. And it was guard cars and army trucks and everything. I was hiding under his bed, and my mother came down and she was like, I'm bringing you down to that place now. She was like, this is just madness. And I just remember getting out from under his bed and just looking at him. And fairness, we laughed. Like, we did laugh. Like, do you know what else was there? But after that, I told my mother I'd go down and to Coomwira. On the way down, we actually connected. Like, we were very close and always had been very close. But obviously, our relationship had been strained with my behaviours and what I put them through.
Coomwira is the largest voluntary provider of addiction treatment services and residential rehabilitation in the country. Its main objective is the rehabilitation of people who suffer from alcohol, drug and gambling addictions, and it's based on the philosophy of total abstinence and the restoration of confidence, self-respect and sense of responsibility.
Definitely going down in the car, we spoke about everything. How we loved each other, even though we killed each other, the whole, you know, all his growing up. He realised that I've always then, on that car journey down, that I was always on his side, always had his back. And that going forward, regardless of what happened, I'd always be there. Brian would always be there. The boys will always be there. Nanny and Grandad will always be there. You know, the poignant people. And his friends, like his real friends. But yeah, we did. We had a very big chat that day, and it really did pull us together, and we've been rocking on it since.
So he was in, he was in for 12 weeks. Now, I'll be honest with you, I said, he's not going to last 12 hours in the place. I couldn't see it. Not from conversation I had with him a few days beforehand.
Started to talk about the stuff I'd never really wanted to talk about was I never really had the awareness to speak about. I went in there with an acceptance of, this is it, I'm an alcoholic. It wasn't really hard to say. I kind of knew at that point. Like, you get up in the morning, you have routine, meditation every day, mass every day. Like, I thought I was going to burn into flames in there at times, you know, like saying mass every day. You actually, you know, you get a job and it's just to bring you into a routine.
Yeah.
And just take out your don't worry, like, there's no newspapers, there's no nothing. Like, it just brought me back, helped me understand what was going on with my life and why I felt the way I did. And, you know, then the training kicked in. I was like, I don't know, it's just something took over me. So I started doing the workouts twice a day, and then did the country lane. There was a country lane, it was 300 meters. So I obviously had a stopwatch, so I knew. 10 lengths was 3K, so I was like trying to beat my time all the time. And there's an old man from Monaghan, loved Gaelic. He would wake me up every morning at 5 o'clock, and he'd go for a walk, and he'd wake me up to go out running, like.
Wow.
And we'd talk about, you know, you need to get back to where you're at. You know, he's like, I can tell it's in you, the fire is in you. Like, this is a man going through his own problems. But like, I met some people in there that I don't think I'll ever be able to connect with other people like I connected with people there. And I might never see them again.
So I was delighted then, 4 weeks into it, and you're inquiring all the time, how is he getting on, how is he getting, because there's no communication with him. And I think it was about 4 weeks in, phone rang, and it was, I don't know what number, it wasn't his number, but, and he says, hi, Jack, it's Luke here. He says, geez, how are you getting on? And he says, I'm only allowed one phone call. So I said, I'd phone you to say thanks. And I was delighted, number one, that he was 4 weeks in the place. And I was particularly delighted, and it's kind of a measure of the fella, you know, that he was so grateful and so thankful. It's not that I had very little to do with it. I would give all the credit to his mum, Una, to Jerry O'Flynn, the players, Joe and Katie Nangle. Like, it was just so many people got around him. And it just meant a lot, you know, that really kind of meant a lot.
So I did my priorities out. So getting better was one. Started to come to terms with it. I'd have to go sober for the rest of my life. And that was a life's work. And that was okay. I understood why. Yeah. That's what the whole process is about.
And there was another day a few weeks after. I was in Cusick Park and I was just over at the terraces and I was just leaning up against one of the palings on my own, just watching the game or the start of the game. And he just came over and he just says, "How are you, Jack? How are you getting on?" And I says, not too bad. He says, "I just come over to say hello." And in his own way, it was kind of another form of saying, you know, thank you and so on. And I think that was a really good measure of him, you know, and that's the fella that we always saw in him. And I think it shows real good, genuine characteristics about him.
I came here a bit when I left because I had a lot of club stuff on.
Mm.
But I think, I remember we had a chat with you, I think, and said, you might not get a chance to play at Westmeath again, but you'll have to be in shape at least.
Mm.
And you said, let's get to work. I think after the Downs got knocked out, I remember getting a message. I came in here and did a body scan. And after that, then I don't know, I just started falling over it, but I probably replaced what was going on. I was training
100%.
There. I felt safe here almost, like, you know, because I knew I was doing something positive. Nobody's going to question me for being in the gym for 5 or 6 hours a day.
I think people do, like, it definitely is a thing that, like, you know, you're swapping one addiction for another. Yeah. But my God, it's the lesser of two evils. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
when the sporting career is done, you're incredibly invested in that now as a lifestyle almost, right? And there'll be something, obviously, when that is part of your life is done, because you've obviously used it as a transition away from...
100%. Like, when I came out of Conwira, like, the next day I had a game for the Downs against Kinnegad, like, our rivals.
Mm.
And, like, that's what I was building for. And, like, I was obviously a sub. And I remember just sitting on the bench and, like, a bit of me was so excited, like, because this was real emotion. Like, I was just buzzing. But... remember people looking up, like, literally, this is what people were looking at me like. An alien up in the, you know, but I was just trying to stay focused and, came on, got a few points. It was just great. Like, it was just amazing.
You're planning to be 3 years sober in the summer.
End of June, start of July.
Yeah. An important milestone, landmark goal almost.
Oh my God. See what we're doing here would never happen without that. My life has changed drastically over the last few years and so much for the positive. I've done a lot of stuff in my life that I'm not proud of and I've lots of shame and guilt to it, but like I'm not a prisoner of my past. I really try to learn from my mistakes. I want to try and give back to as much, like football is a big part of my life, but like in the grand scheme of things, it's small. Like there's so much more people dealing with different things that, you know, I just happen to play Gaelic. If Gaelic ended for me, I have a lot of stuff that I can work on then, you know, helping out other people, and you learn from your mistakes and you have to.
Potentially I'd love to get into working maybe with kids and along the things that I'm interested in. I love health and fitness. I love the gym. I love pushing myself. I love helping others as well, and I suppose it's just setting up the blocks that if it ever is in place, I have the ability to do it. And it might never work out, but at least...
It will.
People ask about purpose. I think eventually that's what mine is. That's what I want to get involved with. I just want to have a positive impact for younger people.
Part of the Alliance campaign is in relation to Stop the Drop.
Yeah.
Kids who, particularly girls who are involved in sport in primary school and then the transition to secondary school, it falls off, and also for boys. Your experience of that, like you're obviously sport mad, you're involved in different sports, but your experience of that dynamic?
Well, just I think in the intercounty game first, like if you're a fit, strong man and you're not the most talented, you can make it, you know. Now, obviously you need talent to somewhat, but like it's kind of gone that way that good athletes can make it. But I just think, sport is massive in a person's development. Hard work, you know, attitude, punctuality, all these things. But like the inclusion is a massive part. And I think one of the first things I said was, until you get to adult, who cares about winning? And now I know there's, you'll get some young lads that are on a path to the top, but like, how many won?
It's not about that, really.
No, yeah. No. There is some young lads that think like that,
yeah.
But it's not about that. Like, it's not about winning. Mm. It's about taking part. And that might sound crazy, like, but the inclusion is what it's all about. Like, because you get young people that can isolate themselves, and to be around people all the time, you just learn. You can learn kind of traits.
You know, you have these choppy waters, you have the rocky roads and all of that, and you come through that. And I'm delighted now that he's embraced it and he's gone on and he's really committed. He's a leading figure in it for club and county, and I'm delighted for him. It's a testament of his character. It's a testament of his perseverance, his resilience, the belief in himself.
You definitely would have said, like, on day one, coming out of Coonamurra, that the recovery never ends.
Yeah,
and time. Like, there's always going to be an ebb and a flow to it. And I think, like, the Luffy 2.0, the upgrade is definitely just more balanced.
He's so genuine, like, he really is, and he's so mindful of everybody. Like, and I don't think a lot of people saw that for years because of, you know, he had the Jack the Lad persona and stuff, but he's massive heart. And people are seeing that now. He's genuine, he'd do anything for anybody. Like, he'd drop anything to go and give anyone a hand, or do whatever he can, you know. So I suppose he's getting his rewards now. I think, what does he say? Is it, I'm paying it forward? All the help he's received, I'm paying it forward, which is fantastic.
There's just peace of mind and comfort, you know, that if Luke walks into the gym, or if I walk into a dressing room and you're there, like, that, yeah, it's just such a positive energy, you know. Like, you are hilarious, you know. If someone asks you to stand up and speak about something, they better know what they're getting in for. Like.
Before he even went away, I said it to him, if you come through this, like, you're going to save lives. You're going to have such an impact on people. And I literally told the players, I said, literally what this is all about for me and for us, I think, if you give me the Sam Maguire in this hand, and if you give me that Luke is going to live a long, happy, healthy life in this hand, I'll take this all day.
To continue day by day and just work on himself all the time and just keep paying forward and be healthy and happy. That's all I want from him. That's all anyone wants for their children.
I was interested in your the order of the stuff that you said at the very start there. And I was kind of asking it by way of finding out how defined you are by football. And that felt like, what's a third, fourth down the list a little bit?
Yeah, well, like, to be honest, football is not everything. Sometimes I make it everything. That's because of my love for it. But, like, it doesn't pay my bills. It doesn't make my family happy. It's amazing. It's something, like, so special to be involved in, like, a team that wants to get better all the time. But you can't be defined by your sport, because, like, ultimately I'm going to retire someday, and, like, what will I be known as then? A Westmeath footballer, like, when I'm 40 or whatever. So, like, for me, I want to be defined as a good person. When you're in the midst of your own problems, there's no one else's problems. Like, it's always why me and poor me. But when you get awareness and acceptance of something, it's so much bigger. You can finally start to see why. You can understand why you're acting the way you are, maybe, or why your brain ticks that way. But you look after your mind, the body follows type stuff. And if you're strong up above, there's not much that can penetrate you. I said to you earlier, I'm an open book. I don't really mind sharing. It's for the greater good. I think want to be known as a good person, with good morals, learns from his mistakes.
At Screwfix, you can click and collect over 10,000 trade products in as little as 1 minute. So whether it's a power drill in Portlaoise or guttering in Galway, when you need it yesterday, just click at screwfix.ie and collect at your local store 7 days a week. Nobody gonna slow me down. Oh. T's and C's apply. Visit screwfix.ie for full details.